This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. The Georgia legislature convenes on Monday for what's expected to be a very fast and possibly contentious election year session. Governor Nathan Deal joins us now in his office. Governor, thanks for having us and Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, Dennis. Nice to be with you.
You have so far very consistently declined to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. You have, however, heard from hospitals around the state, safety net hospitals in particular, that they're looking at a tremendous loss of federal money, not just because of Medicaid, but other reasons as well. But Medicaid plays a big part in that if it's not expanded. Does the state have any alternative way of helping the hospitals if Medicaid is not expanded?
Well, we will continue our Medicaid program. And that includes incorporating the expenses that the Affordable Care Act has placed on the state through our own Medicaid program as it now exists. One thing being that we have about 100,000 people, we estimate, that are currently eligible but have not enrolled. If someone is eligible and they go to an exchange, for example, my understanding is that they are being automatically enrolled in our state Medicaid program. So we are seeing an expanded population group that is coming into our Medicaid program, and it is, of course, one of the most costly programs the state participates in.
But there is still the loss of federal money to the hospitals, aren't they, if the Medicaid rolls are not expanded?
No. The loss of revenue to the hospitals is the fact that one of the funding mechanisms for the Affordable Care Act was to cut back on money for what we call disproportionate share hospitals. That is, those hospitals that have a larger than average Medicaid and indigent population. That's the decision of the federal government. That's not the decision of the state of Georgia. I understand there may be discussions in place for deferring those rollbacks on those reimbursements. I hope that is the case, because it is the loss of that DSH money that has a significant negative impact on hospitals.
And DSH money is the acronym for the disproportionate share that you mentioned earlier.
That's correct.
There is still, though, the problem of a large population of uninsured. And according to some studies that have come out recently, the states that have actually participated have actually, as you might expect, seen more participation by folks who are uninsured. They get coverage. Does the state have a problem, then, with a large uninsured population? You have to find a way to insure them, and they're costing money to the state anyway.
Well, that's what we have had. And I think the important distinction here is that the Supreme Court said that states could not be forced to expand our Medicaid populations. The statute, when it was originally passed, had the mandate to expand included in it. And the White House and Congress have not revisited the statute in light of the Supreme Court opinion. So therefore, if they want to do something to cover those individuals, the Supreme Court says you have to figure out a way other than trying to coerce states into expanding their Medicaid program.
Are you saying no, not ever, or are you still hoping for some kind of block grant, for instance, some sort of compromise with the feds?
Well, I've always said that if the federal government would block grant the money that they put into our Medicaid program, we could make the money we currently get spread further and cover more people. Give us the opportunity to design our program as we think it fits the needs of the citizens of Georgia, and we will do a better job than the one-size-fits-all approach that the federal government uses.
Are you optimistic that something might come out of this?
I think the federal government is always reluctant to give up their control and their strings that they associate with money.
On education, do you know yet how much we'll see an increase for funding in education K through 12 in this session? We have increased state revenues, but do you have any idea yet what kind of increases we'll see?
Well, it will be a substantial amount, the largest that we've seen since the 2007-2008 fiscal years. We believe that it is appropriate to put additional sums of money in K through 12. Since we do have additional revenue that the economy has generated, it is still the number one consumer of state revenue is education. It's well over half of our revenue, And that pattern of continuing to fund education at the level we are able to do based on our budgets is going to be followed this year. As you know, we have spared K through 12 education from some of the cuts that we imposed on other state agencies for the last two fiscal years.
While the debate goes on over whether to overhaul the state's formula, quality basic education funding formula, which goes back to 1985, in the meantime, will this get the state closer to actually fully funding QBE?
Well, certainly any infusion of additional money will move in that direction. The formula itself is flawed. It is one that has been unable to be achieved since its inception. And in past administrations, people have tried to tinker with the formula in order to make their expenditures look better. We have not tinkered with it. We've done the best we could with this formula, even though almost everybody acknowledges that it needs major revision, which I hope will be undertaken and be in place for consideration in the 2015 budget cycle, 2015 calendar year, rather.
But you don't want to try to overhaul the formula this legislative session?
I don't think there's enough time to do that. I think we need to hear more specifics about what educators think are the appropriate places to put money. And the formula, as I indicated, is not adequate. It addresses things that perhaps we have moved in the years since 1985. We've moved considerably in the way we deliver education, and that does not totally take it into account in the formula.
Speaking of something that takes time, on the first day of the session, the state Senate is holding a hearing on a plan to overhaul the state's medical malpractice system, taking patients' cases out of the courts and turning them over to a panel similar to workers' compensation. Yesterday, House Speaker David Ralston said he's not sure there's time to do something that big this year. Do you think that idea should move forward this year?
I agree with the Speaker's assessment of that. As we have heard just general discussions about the idea, what I have seen is that obviously the legal community is opposed to it, and also the medical community has come out in opposition to that approach. Those are the two big professions that are involved in that issue.
And usually there have been times when they fought with each other.
They usually are on the opposite side of issues like this. In this instance, both of them appear to be opposed to what is being proposed. But I do think that if it's going to be given consideration, it does require a much thorough vetting than has been received yet.
On child welfare, you have already proposed hiring 525 more child protection workers. That's an increase of more than 25%. This, of course, following many documented cases of where children have died or where cases have simply not been handled properly in the Division of Family and Children's Services. Is there more to your proposal, though, that you'll present to the legislature in addition to the extra workers?
Well, first of all, I would not say that there have been many deaths. There have been too many deaths because one is too much. Yes, that is a proposal. That number, it will be over a three-year period. We will begin the process immediately. We have already begun the process of having a review of all the cases that have been closed in the recent past to make sure that they were appropriately closed and that the children that were involved in those cases are not still in need of some degree of supervision. We believe that is the most effective way. We're trying to reduce the caseload of our DFACS workers significantly, and we expect that our recommendations in the budget will begin that process of reducing those caseloads. We're shooting for caseloads about 15 per worker. We're obviously above that right now.
So will there be money to go with the extra workers? I mean, not just to pay their salaries, but to allow more efficient processing of cases, let's say, more thorough overview, that kind of thing?
Yes, because one of the things that we're putting money in immediately is for intake workers who will be the initial screening process, and we're adding additional workers there immediately, because that's where a lot of the backlog, that's where a lot of the delay occurs, is that the initial report was never particularly forwarded through the system fast enough. So we're going to address it. We recognize that money alone will not necessarily solve all of these problems, but we're going to do what we think we can do in both the short term and the long term.
The idea of privatizing the child welfare system has been floated. Do you think that that's worth study, or are the problems there no matter who runs it?
Well, I think that's certainly something that can be looked at. There are both good and bad results that have been achieved in some states where that has occurred. I think anything that we can do that will protect children better, both in the context of trying to keep them in their own home or in the context of removing them from their homes and putting them in some type of foster care, anything that will improve those qualities of life that those children are receiving as they are moved out of a home setting will certainly be worthy of consideration. And I would hope that we will begin the review of those kind of proposals in the very near future.
But you're not advancing the idea of privatizing it specifically at this point?
Not at this time. There has been an ongoing discussion, which we expect will continue with the Lieutenant Governor and with the Speaker of the House, with regard to the privatization of foster care in the state of Georgia. We don't know at this point what the final result of that will be, but certainly we've been a party to that discussion and look forward to continuing that.
You have, in the last few weeks, moved the statue of Thomas Watson from the central part of the plaza where that statue has been for years to another part of the Capitol. In the meantime, there have been calls for a statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was born literally right up the street from here. Given the impact that he has had on the world, really, is it time now for a statue of Dr. King at the Capitol?
Well, that's a decision I think the members of the General Assembly need to make. It's not one that the governor should impose on them. I feel certain there will be discussions about that probably this year.
You don't have to impose it, though, to encourage it. Would you take any sort of a position on that?
Well, I generally don't take positions on pending legislation or anticipated legislation, and I think I should leave it there.
The campus gun carry bill, it was in the middle of conference committee when the legislature adjourned. Do you favor that bill moving?
Well, there again, there have been many iterations of that bill, and I'm not quite sure at this point in time what the final product might look like. I know there is a great deal of interest in making some clarifications in the current law by way of definition or otherwise. But I think there again, that's still pending legislation, and I'll wait and see what the General Assembly in their combined judgment produces.
Governor Nathan Deal, thank you so much for being with us.
Appreciate
it.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you.